please hold. Hello?
Hello, Malik, are you there?
Yes, yes, I'm here.
Well, you're very clear for the minute. Please, talk fast.
Okay. Hello, this is Malik Naveed again from Peshawar. I was referring to the situation in the northwestern frontier province. Regarding Peshawar, as I told you earlier, we had this militancy on three sides. One was Dara Adam Khail, which is a tribal area. Then is Mamand Agency, which is a tribal area, where you have the so-called Taliban. And then we had the two different militant setups. One was Ansarul Islam, and the other was the Lashkar-e-Islami. The Lashkar-e-Islami was creating a lot of problems for the city of Peshawar, in that he used to come in and commit serious crimes like kidnapping and colleges, especially the girls' schools in particular. We went in for the criminal gangs and those who were associated with these the militants. That operation was very successful, but the peace in the settled areas of the tower largely depends on the situation in the tribal areas. So this is the tower. Then we are having some problems in Hangu, which is to the southwest of Peshawar.
Hello.
There, the militants had again been making forays and incursions into the settled area. And then the operation was conducted against these militants, and they were pushed back into the tribal areas. And the operation is still going on. It lasted for another couple of days. In the meantime, the police, on the police side, we have again geared up our security apparatus, and we will ensure that these militants do not come in and create problems for us in the settled areas. But Mark, the problem is that we are lacking the capacity to properly and effectively deal with these militants in the settled areas. Unfortunately, the police is not sort of geared to fight such a kind of insurgency. It's like fighting the shadows of an invisible army. And there's a lot to be done to improve our security apparatus. Some people are surprised when we tell them that we do not have a helicopter. We have a very few bulletproof jackets. We are very poor on the mobility side, on the heavy weaponry side. So there's a lot needs to be done so that the police is able to counter these militant incursions from the tribal area. So that is one area where a lot of assistance is required, and that is required on a fast-track basis. I have already started training my men in the anti-terrorist training. And we are churning out about 500 plus constables through short courses of about 6 weeks each, so that they get the feel of the training. And then we are also planning to, in the long term, establish a 7,500 strong anti-terrorist force, which will be hopefully on ground in about 1 year's time. But I think we need to do it fast, and there's a lot of interventions required in this respect. The provincial government and the federal government are very seriously working on these, but I think the issue is pretty serious, and there's need for the international community. come out with some kind of concrete interventions in the shortest possible time. Secondly, I was referring to these militant organizations. Some militant organizations are known as the genuine Taliban, who want Afghanistan to be liberated. Others have joined the fray. They have either joined the Taliban, the criminal elements, or they have set up their own small militant organizations on the pattern of Taliban. They also have learned the tricks from the Taliban, and they are also acting like the secret societies of the past. For this, there's a lot of intelligence to be gathered, and there's need for effective action against them, provided the peace talks do not sort of bear results. Over.
Well, thank you. That's all very clear. I think if you could maybe give us a little more of your thinking on the concrete interventions from the international community, because I think there's a wide range of possibilities. What would be acceptable interventions in your mind?
I cannot hear you. Can you speak a bit louder, please?
Hi, can you hear me? It's Karen.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. We were just wondering if you could talk a bit more about what you would like the international community to do. What kind of interventions would be acceptable to the Pakistani people, and what kind of partnership arrangements were you thinking of?
Well, one is a short-term, quick fix requirement in which we need support for our commodities, for the law and order apparatus, which includes helicopters, which includes APCs, the armored personnel carriers, which includes bulletproof vests, which includes improved mobility, which includes night vision devices. This is in the short term. And of course, interventions on the infrastructure also. Because in the 23 districts we have, 11 are without police lines. 40% of our police stations are not housed in police buildings. So despite that, we are keeping up the morale of the force. It's very, very difficult. In the long term, it is very important that job opportunities are provided to the youth. This is a very serious problem that is augmenting the efforts of the of these militant groups, because they find a number of jobless, educated youth roaming around, and this forms a vulnerable group. I would, in fact, suggest some sort of arrangement like the Conservation Corps that was set up in America after the Great Recession. I have calculated the amount. It will not come out to about more than $500 million dollars per annum. So if you extend it for a period of 10 years and employ 300,000 people even, that will not cost you more than $10 billion for 10 years. And about 12 and a half for 15 years if you take them on contract. They can be then properly educated in the true perspective of the religion, that is Islam, because they are being misguided by these deviant militants. And then they can be taught skills who could later on then be employed for construction activity and employed in the ROZs. In the which are being considered by the American government. So this is very important, because in this way, a lot of liquidity will flow into the tribal areas, where this has always been a tradition that whenever the conquering armies used to pass, they used to employ a large number of these men, because these are barren areas. They are there is little agriculture, and there is no economic activity going on in these areas. So if you improve the liquidity, a large number of the population will naturally turn against these people, because they will then be acknowledged supporters of the government, because they will have a bond with the government. The government could issue them with identity cards and acknowledge their existence as productive citizens of this country. So this is a plan which I believe will immediately bring about a positive change. I have been floating this idea for a very long time, I had also discussed this with the American ambassador, Mr. Crocker. I've discussed it with the World Bank, the Asian Development Bank, and they all seem to accept the thing, but nothing seems to be moving.
Okay, yeah, no, you explained that very carefully to us when we saw you as well. I'm just wondering, though, in the short term, do you think there's, you know, the American government, the American military is very anxious about militant activity in the area. Do you see any role for joint patrolling with U.S. soldiers, or do you think that would be a bad idea?
Joint patrolling, I don't think that is advisable within the boundaries of Pakistan. This will not be acceptable by the people of even the settled areas. But I think on the intelligence gathering and on support, I think there cannot be two opinions. But Americans coming in, patrolling, taking direct action, that will not be sort of viewed well in the public eye in Pakistan.
Okay, and before I open the floor, would you mind just explaining again about the militant activity in Peshawar? Did you feel that Peshawar was under threat, or was it a short-term threat that you felt that your police forces could handle? And then I'll open the floor for some questions.
Well, threat in terms of, you see, they had actually started coming in four or five vehicles, and they were so heavily armed that even the police could not stop them. And they would come in, stop at central places, show their muscle, and withdraw. Then gradually they started going to the markets, warning the CD shop owners, warning the barbers, and threatening the girls' schools, sending letters to the girls' schools, ringing them up to close down. And then finally they also, in addition to kidnappings for ransom, they also kidnapped 17 members of a minority community, and that was where then it was decided to go for them, and a limited operation was conducted in which they were pushed back, and so on one of the fronts this thing has receded, so we are having a little problem from that side. But this was one militant group of Lashkar-e-Islam. On the Mamun side, we have a very strong establishment of the Taliban, and they are sort of active in the tribal areas, and also they keep ingressing into the settled areas, and there have been a large number of cases of kidnappings for ransom from this area. Plus, they have also been delivering threats to different people. Their particular focus is on NGOs. Not that they only kidnap them for stopping their activities, but actually this is being done for ransom. There's a lot of thinking going on action against these people also, which will take place once the Khyber Agency issue is settled. Over.
Great. Thank you, Malik Khan. Now we'll take, and thank you for your patience, and apologize again for the technical problems. We'd like to take a few questions from the people in this room and then maybe from some of the callers. So please, could you reintroduce yourself when you ask questions?
Okay, but could you please, when they ask a question, if I cannot hear it properly, could you please explain to me the question, because the voice from the conference room is not very clear.
Okay, will do.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask if you could describe a little bit more in detail what your view is of the motivation of these insurgents. You mentioned that programs like the CCC program that we had in the United States, or that the ROZs would be very helpful in giving these people alternatives to joining the insurgency. I wonder if you could describe a little bit what you think the motivations are. How many people are motivated for either religious or ideological reasons, or how many join because it's paid?
Well, I think there is their actual strength on ground is not very much. It would not be more than in a few thousands. But then you see what they do is they focus on certain vulnerable groups. For example, very poor areas where people have no money, where there is no education. You know that in the tribal areas, the education level is amongst the males is less than 16%. And those people who are educated, they move out. Most of the people have never been out of the these areas, and they do not know what lies in the civilized world. Because of this, there's a lot of unemployment, and there are the vulnerable groups are available. These militants have sort of gained expertise in brainwashing young boys, taking them to their places and showing them the goodies of heaven. And they are brainwashed and they are motivated. Plus, they are also paid. So basically, it's a question of payment and motivation. Where motivation works, they motivate people. Where there are people who don't get motivated, but they are keen to join them just for holding a weapon and having power of a talib, where he can go around in groups and threaten people. So that is one of the angles also. But I think once there is economic prosperity, things will definitely change. And there will be a lot of people, because majority of the people do not feel comfortable with these people, because they are very harsh. They know that the kind of dispensation they believe in is like the Taliban who ruled Afghanistan. And the majority of the people in Pakistan do not want that type of a dispensation. So if there is liquidity in the market, if these people are employed, if they are taken care of, peace will come. And once peace comes, only then you can go into developmental work, which is very badly needed in these areas. In terms of interventions are required on the health side, on the education side, on the infrastructure side. You need small dams to be built. You need industrialization. You need to build roads so that people are connected, so that there's mobility. So these are the things which will definitely bring about a positive change. But these can only take place if you have peace. And I think peace will only come if you provide proper employment to these people and give them hope. That is very important, Mark. Rick, you have to give these people hope. Hopelessness is one thing which drives people to the wall. So that element is very important.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up question. How much do these people get paid by the insurgency, the leaders there, to become insurgents? In other words, what are they getting in terms of actual cash payment? Do you have any sense of that?
During the SWAT operation, the daily they got some people, and they ran short of people. They announced that they would be giving about 500 rupees, that is about $9, which is a lot of money in this country, per day, per person. Otherwise, the information that we get is that they are paid between 8,000 rupees, which is about $125-$130, they are given a weapon. And if they die during fighting, their family gets about $13,000-$14,000, which is probably more than the government pays to the martyrs who die fighting these militants.
Okay, great. We'll take some more questions from this room, because I think we've lost our callers, actually. So please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. The things that you have spoken about, security assistance, helicopters, bulletproof jackets, as well as economic developments, sound very similar to the 2006 Sustainable Development Plan, a partnership between the Sustainable Development Plan,
A
partnership between Pakistan and the United States to provide security assistance training to the Frontier Corps, as well as economic development through the Fatah Development Secretariat. Are you involved with this, and can you discuss the progress or lack of progress and your involvement in this?
Well, I think not much has really been done. There is a lot of commitment on the part of the donor agencies. But the problem is that unless you have peace in that area, you cannot develop that area. If there is fighting going on, if the contractors are attacked, if the law enforcement agencies are attacked, there can be no development. You could only achieve maybe 10-15%, and that too in the areas which are peaceful, and they do not require immediate attention, immediate focus. So the issue is to focus on those areas which are actually disturbed and which are going through this problem of militancy. But to ensure that these areas get developed, you have to bring in peace. And for peace, these measures, as I referred to, they are very, very important, because without peace, you cannot make progress. And this area will keep on being embroiled in this kind of a situation.
Okay, great. Please reintroduce yourself so he knows who's calling.
Hello.
I think, is it Commissioner Malik? This is a question for you. Very interesting, the issue that you raised about youth and the need to get youth focused on development issues and certainly education and training. I've just finished 6 weeks of survey in your area and throughout Pakistan for USAID, and I wrote a report on those issues. But we did discover when we came to the Peshawar area and we moved around some of the areas north of Peshawar that what we were seeing were, of course, the beginning of schools that now are being constructed and built, but very few people to actually man them and keep them going. So if we're talking about training and education, one of the big problems in Pakistan at the moment is to get professionals to commit to going into these areas to do the job that has been done. And I'm wondering whether you can make a comment on that issue. There are a number of other issues I'd like to raise too, but that's the first one. How do we get Pakistani professionals to go into these areas to do the job that has to be done?
Okay. Mark, there are two areas. One area, the settled areas of the northwestern frontier province. I don't think there is much problem. There is some problem because people are scared that they may be kidnapped. But otherwise, the overall situation is not bad. It's okay till such time that there are threats or actual incursions by these tribal people. So in the settled areas, the development is very badly needed. But here, the development is no problem. I think the government, the federal and the provincial government, have done a very good job in spending the money that has been spent here. Our record has been probably better than other provinces. The problem areas are the tribal areas, where you have these government organizations. They have the funds, they have the will, but the problem is that of security. To get into a project in a tribal area, you have to have security, you have to live there with the people and ensure that these projects are completed. But the problem is that there is a lot of fear of kidnapping by these militant groups, and that is why the development works and the educational system and this building, the construction of schools and construction of roads, that cannot take place. So basically, as I said earlier, peace must come before anything else, because nothing is possible if there is no peace.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. Do we have any other questions in this room? Yeah, please, Jerry, and then Hamid.
Jerry Hyman at CSIS. I was wondering, sir, if you could talk a little bit about the Fata areas, about the tribal areas.
Pardon?
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit, distinguish a little bit between the various in the Fata, in the tribal areas. I wonder if you could talk a bit about your strategy for dealing with the various agencies. You talked about security being a critical feature, critical precondition of any kind of social progress or economic progress in those areas. Are you planning to, and those areas, if I'm not mistaken, are differentially insecure. Some of them more insecure, some of them less insecure. At least my understanding is that Khurram, for example, is less insecure than Waziristan. Is the plan to secure some of these areas well before moving to the others, or to work in all areas at the same time? What's the strategy for dealing with the Fata areas from the security point of view?
Rick, actually, the problem in the Khurram agency is different. That is purely sectarian. But in that sectarian also, wherever you have these sectarian problems, the militants, they start backing one of the sides. The just to give you a background of the tribal areas, these tribal areas are like a buffer zone between the, they are part of Pakistan, but they are like a buffer zone between the tribal areas, between the settled areas and Afghanistan. And the laws of Pakistan do not apply there. They have a traditional, thousands of year old self-governing law, which has been tempered by the frontier crime regulation, allowing them to live according to their own traditions, decide their own cases, but live under the overall supervision, protection, guidance, and administration of the political agent who used to enjoy immense powers in the past, but because of this militancy and the army action, the position of the political agent has been diluted. The political agent used to ensure through his powers and through his relations with the tribes to ensure that the overall balance of balance is struck between the tribes and there is no law and order problems in these tribal areas. The problem is that if this had been this kind of a problem had occurred earlier, the political agent would have gathered lashkars or tribal armies and dealt with this problem. But the problem is twofold. One, the position of the political agent has been diluted. Secondly, the militants have a very brutal way of dealing with people who deviate from their way of thinking or who, according to them, spy against them or who speak against them. And there have been cases like in the Waziristan agency where over 272 Maliks were martyred, and Maliks are a very, very important institution in the tribal area. This, the government is now trying to bring about a change so that the traditional way of governing the tribal areas is brought back in practice. And that, hopefully, with time, I think it should work out. The tribal Maliks are strengthened. They are given resources. They are assured of full help. And they gradually then rise up and confront the militants. This is what I have done in the settled areas now. I have created under the Act, the Police Order 2002, I have created a force of special police force, which is recruited from the community. They are volunteers, but we have about 7,000 of them now. This number will increase and it may exceed 100,000 people. So wherever there is this kind of trouble, we will tell these people to come out and confront these militants, because these militants will think 10 times before firing on the civilian population. This thing has already happened in Hangu, where in three villages, these special police forces came out in hundreds and sided with the police and said that if any militant comes this way, we are going to sort them out. And fortunately or unfortunately, almost everyone in the frontier province is armed. So the problem of weapons is also not a problem here. So this mobilization of the public mobilization is a very, very important tool which we are working on. And I think this will make a lot of difference also. And this should be done in the tribal areas with the tribal Maliks, as in the past, they should rise and confront these people because whenever the army or the frontier corps, they move in, there is always collateral damage. And then there is always allegations that the army or the frontier corps is fighting us on behest of some powers or some vested interests, and different kinds of stories come up, and they are gullible, uneducated people, so they believe all sorts of things. So we, the government, believes that they should be left to govern themselves in the way they used to do 10, 15 years back.
Malik Khan, but your police officers do not have jurisdiction for the tribal areas, is that correct?
It is correct. Okay. But for the tribal areas, it is the Maliks and their tribes who will, who should be sort of motivated to counter this problem. In the settled areas, wherever there is problem, we are gearing up and forming the special police force. So the special police force will be restricted to the settled areas only.
Right. Okay. Thank you. So we have one final question for you, okay,
yeah,
for one of my colleagues, Hamid.
Hi, Malik. This is Hamid. Thank you for all the information that you have shared. On regard of maintaining security in that area, you have talked about the socioeconomic opportunities, but as you mentioned rightly, there isn't security, and a lot of, especially international investors, they are afraid to come there on the ground and to do some investments. So what are some of the strategies that you're proposing that they come and they just like work on the investment? And the second part of the question is that a lot of people are living in those areas, about 3.5 million people, and obviously most of them are not militant, only a few thousand of them joined the Taliban or whatsoever. So, and they have had in previous, for example, Ghaffar Khan from the same area who believed in the principles of nonviolence. Are there some moderate forces there as well to be identified? Thank you.
Regarding the first part, that is the investment. As I said, we have to bring in peace, whether it is through jirgas or through peace deal or through force or through creation of a conservation corps. In the past history, when the Mughals used to come, they literally used to employ almost every second, third person as a khasadar to ensure that they could go through the tribal area, because they used to create a very serious problem for them. So I think if they are given jobs and peace returns, then investment will come. You can build up infrastructure there. The government agencies can go in. Even the NGOs can go in, and they can start doing work. But in a disturbed state of affairs, you cannot do this, you see.
Okay, well, Malik Khan, we realize we're keeping you away from your very important duties in NWP. So we wanted to thank you again, and very, very sorry about all the technological problems that we've had. Hopefully next time things will go a bit smoother and we can keep people on
the
line.
Thank you very much. My regards to all. Best of luck.
Okay, well, thank you again. So we're going to...
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So now we're going to call Afrasiab and try to keep him on the line for about 20, 30 minutes, if you guys can be patient. Which is really too bad, actually, because that would have been really interesting.
So we lost the 20. Where
didn't they come from?
Well, they're calling from all over the world.
Because we were assured that this would be within the wizardry of our technical capacity.
And they're calling from all over. We had Ahmed Rashid calling in, probably from Pakistan, from that. All so right. That was him, yeah.
I thought it was David.
No, Ahmed earlier. Ahmed was in the phone. We're hoping in future to try have a computer up so people can actually type in questions. It might be a little bit easier to respond to, but let's...
Well, I think we got to master this.
Yeah. Hello, Afrasiab?
Hello.
Oh, we can hear you. That's wonderful. So very sorry about delaying you for so long. We'd love to hear about how the negotiations are going. And there seems to be a lot of confusion here in Washington about a number of different negotiations that are going on. I know that you're running the negotiations in NWP, but then the military is also negotiating in some of the tribal areas. So maybe if you could clarify what's happening on your part with the negotiation process, and then what you know about the other mediation efforts that are happening. We'd be very grateful to hear about that.
Well, thank you. Actually, I am negotiating with groups and tribes inside the province. I have been able to sign two agreements in the province, one in Deer and the other in Swat. The Deer agreement is working smoothly and has stabilized the situation in that district. But there are strains in Swat because militants operating from their sanctuaries in Fatah are putting pressure on groups in Swat who had entered into agreements with the provincial government. The main problem is that Fatah remains under the literal control of militants. Most of our districts that are adjacent to Fatah are vulnerable to attacks by militants who are operating from their sanctuaries in Fatah. Actually, these militants operate on both sides of the Durand Line and destabilize Afghanistan as well as Pakistan. Unfortunately, so far, our governments have failed to have a clear strategy of meeting the challenge of militancy in Fatah. We need to have short-term measures and long-term measures. The provincial government has no control over Fatah, which is directly dealt by the federal government, in fact, by the president of Pakistan. So there is a dramatic disconnect between the province and Fatah. As you know, last week, a Waziristan-based warlord, Baitullah Masood, threatened to act against the provincial government if it did not resign within 5 days. It is ridiculous because this is an elected government enjoying the support of majority of the people of the province. But it shows the audacity of the warlord who is based in Fatah and who thinks himself beyond reprisal. So, meeting the challenge, I think, political leadership of Pakistan, military leadership, federal government, and provinces need to sit together. There's a very important meeting taking place in Islamabad tomorrow. That is July 23rd. And we hope that this meeting will see important decisions for addressing the problem of peace and security in Pakistan and in the entire region.
Hello? Are you there?
Hello.
Okay, great. Sorry, the connection isn't that great. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you so well about the meeting tomorrow. Who will be at the meeting? Will it be people negotiating?
Tomorrow, Prime Minister Gilani has called a meeting of the parliamentary leaders of Pakistan People's Party, which will be represented by Asif Ali Zardari, Awami National Party, that will be represented by Asfandiyar Wali Khan, the representatives of Jamiatul Ramai Islam, the representatives of Muslim League Nawaz Sharif, and top military leadership is also expected to be represented in the meeting.
And the meeting will be about the negotiations in NWFP and Fatah, or just NWFP?
No, the meeting is in Islamabad. It is a national affair. The NWFP and Fatah will be represented. Fatah will be represented by the governor of the province, and NWFP will be represented by the chief minister. And our president, Asfandiyar Wali Khan, will also be there.
Okay. I'm sorry. The connection isn't that great. The negotiations tomorrow, I'm sorry to have to clarify this, but the negotiations tomorrow will be about the mediation in Fatah and...
It's a conference. It's a conference of the political leaders and state leaders to discuss the issues of peace and security in Pakistan, which includes NWFP and Fatah.
Okay, great, great. We got that. Okay, so let's open the floor here for some questions. Go ahead, Rick, please.
Can you hear me okay?
Well, I can hear you.
Okay. Try that one.
Is this better? Is this any better? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I think we're still troubled by the issue of enforcement of the agreements and the capacity to move on the militants in the Fatah. Do you see, and that in turn here in Washington leads some people to think about unilateral American intervention. What is the solution to this problem of enforcement and militants running wild?
I think the root cause of the problem is duality in Pakistan's policy toward Afghanistan. We need to streamline this policy by dismantling sanctuaries in Fatah. We also need to reform Fatah because it has become a black hole in no-go area, an area which is used by terrorists for their activities on both sides of the dividend line. So what we need is political will. Pakistan needs to muster political will to take on these sanctuaries and reform Fatah and its isolation and bring it to the mainstream and establish the state writ in Fatah. And Pakistan government has to defeat warlords who are occupying Fatah.
Yeah, how can this happen? I mean, is the Pakistani military still negotiating in Fatah with the different Taliban groups or with the different militant groups? How is this happening right now?
Yes, we hear about that, although we are not directly party to that process. We hear about that, but after the recent outburst of Baitullah Masood against the provincial government, has created real concerns and questions about the proposed agreement between Masood militants and the federal government.
Okay. And what about your own negotiations? Do you feel that, are you getting full support from Islamabad for your negotiations, or is that now on hold because of the meeting tomorrow?
Well, Islamabad has supported our efforts and our negotiations. We have received full cooperation from the federal government and all the concerned institutions in implementing the accord. As I told you, one accord that was signed in Deer district has worked very well. The second accord in Swat is under strain because the militants from Fatah are putting pressure on the group that had entered into an agreement with us.
Okay, great. Okay, go ahead. Is there anybody in the room who would like to ask a question, please?
Hello. Afraz Sahab, this is Rana Fawad. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, my question is, you mentioned that Fatah should be brought into mainstream. Does that imply that Fatah should be given under the administration of the provincial government? And my second question with that is that your party used to criticize Musharraf's policy in that area, but critics say that you are continuing with that policy. How is it different from Musharraf's policy? Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Actually, you got me right. Yes, we want Fatah to become part of the province because at present, military has gone into Fatah, but political parties can't go in Fatah as Political Parties Act is not extended to the area. Military has gone into Fatah, but the higher judiciary, the high courts, and the Supreme Court of Pakistan have no jurisdiction over Fatah. We want to change this, and we want to make Fatah a part of the Northwest Frontier Province. The second question, we criticize the policy of General Musharraf, and we still hold our criticism valid. We have not followed his policy. Actually, his government used to enter into agreements that empowered militants in Fatah. And that is the situation that we witness today is the product of his agreements. The agreements that we have made have clearly stabilized Deer and Swat. And in Swat, we are closely monitoring the agreement. Wherever it is violated, we take action. We have not empowered militants by our agreements. While Musharraf's agreement really empowered militants, and that's why we see the whole of Fatah in the grip of militants. the Musharraf government gradually receded into the background, withdrew from Fatah, and let it be hegemonized by militants.
Okay, could I maybe, I'm sorry, could I follow up on that first part of the question? What kind of progress has there been in attempts to integrate Fatah into NWFP? Has there been any progress?
Yes, it can be done gradually. We can start by extending Political Parties Act into Fatah, and we can hold local bodies elections. We can also hold elections for provincial assembly in Fatah. Fatah representatives should have representation in NWFP assembly. We can extend the jurisdiction of higher judiciary. All these steps can gradually bring Fatah under the writ of the state and a part of the mainstream socioeconomic development and administrative control of the province and the Federation of Pakistan.
But have they started yet, or are you just planning on them? Have you started the integration process? Or has that not been agreed?
I'm sorry, I didn't get you.
Have you started integrating, or has that not yet been agreed in Islamabad?
You see, that is something that creates a suspicion. Mm-hmm. You see, General Musharraf, in spite of his rhetoric for 8 years, failed to take the first step, which was the extension of Political Parties Act. You see, if Political Parties Act was extended, parties would have legally operated in that part, competing with militants and providing alternative to the people, local people, particularly young people. General Musharraf's government didn't do that. So it means that he wanted this area to be kept as a terrain which will be monopolized by militants and extremists.
Okay. A follow-up question, please.
Afrasiyab, so this is Rana Fawad again. I have a follow-up question. It seems that our other call, speaker, he mentioned that Maliks of those areas, the old system should be strengthened, and they can bring peace according to their own system of settling issues and settling disputes, which was their Lashkar or their own local armies. Do you support this idea of strengthening Maliks to eliminate this problem of militancy in those areas? Thank you.
You see, unfortunately, in the last 5 years, the federal government allowed militants to gradually assume power and disempower Maliks. In Waziristan, more than 150 Maliks were killed by Al-Qaeda and Taliban supporters. And the vacuum that was created was filled by extremists. Many of the Maliks had to leave tribal areas. So I don't think we can go back to that system. What we can do is that we can introduce elected local bodies system in Fatah. We can, for example, elect agency councils in each of the 7 political agencies. We can also give them representation in the provincial assembly. The Maliks can become part of the democratic political culture. Some of them who have survived can become can assume the leadership of political parties. But I don't think that we can reinvent the system that had started in 19th century.
Okay, thank you. Please, some more questions for you, sir.
I wonder if you can describe the value in economic stabilization of these forthcoming reconstruction opportunity zones. How do you see them actually operating in both NWFP and possibly in Fatah itself?
I think it's a very important initiative. I think it's a unique chance for Fatah and NWFP to get industrialized. I think it's very attractive proposition. People here, middle classes, intelligentsia, parliament members, bureaucrats are all very excited about it. I think it can provide an alternative to the war economy that has developed in the region after war in Afghanistan. It can also provide alternatives to people who are part of the black economy or drug economy. So it's a very important initiative, and I think if properly implemented, it is going to change the social and economic landscape of Pashtuns living on both sides of the dividend line.
Okay. Jerry, and then...
Thank you. I wondered, sir, if you could discuss a bit the negotiations that ANP is leading. A negotiation presumably is an attempt to reach an agreement between two parties that have different but potentially reconcilable positions. I wonder if you could explain what the position of the your counterparts is. What do they want exactly, and what exactly is the nature of the negotiation? What are you prepared to offer them? What do they want, and where do you see the middle ground? What would the agreement look like? I don't know if you understand my question or not.
Yes, I have. I have heard your question, and let me put it like this. We, for example, our party started the process of negotiations because General Musharraf's government has totally mishandled the situation. His government would vacillate between total inaction in face of the rising militancy, or at the other extreme, it would resort to use of disproportionate power. For example, either they would not use even police when the threat was initial and weak, but then he would wait for it getting strong, and then he would call in the Air Force, use aerial bombardment and heavy weapons. That would lead to collateral damages, which would provide conducive ground for militants to recruit new people. So we had to break this vicious cycle by opening the doors of negotiations. The terrorists were also giving the impression as if they were an aggrieved party who were targeted because they stood for Islam, and the anti-Islamic forces of the world had united against them, etc., etc. So we told them, we demonstrated practically that those who would not resort to violence and those who would use peaceful means for whatever ideology they are working will be allowed to work for their views and ideology. But as long as they do not resort to violence. This has given the government a higher moral ground, and in future, if they violate the agreement, the government will be better able to tackle the problem of militancy by use of state force, because people would know that they have violated the agreement, and it is not some international conspiracy that is bringing violence against them.
Could I just follow up on that? I mean, you were mentioning earlier that you were involved in two sets of negotiations, but that you were having problems in Sfat because of the pressure by the militants in Fatah. Does that mean now that you've gone through the mediation that force can be used, or do you still want to try to mediate more in Sfat to try to get them to push back on Fatah? What's the plan for Sfat?
Yes, it is very important to know that we have based our position on the principles of Pashtun Valley, which is the tribal code of life. So we will stick to our part of the agreement as long as the other party does not go to serious violations. Because the onus of quitting the agreement or subverting the agreement should be on them. I mean, it's very important. Because they have violated the agreement in a number of ways. We have warned them. We have communicated our concern to them, and we are still watching the situation, monitoring the situation carefully and vigilantly.
Go ahead, Jerry. Sorry.
Can we just follow up on that? Just take the SWAT negotiations for a moment. What do the militants want? What are they asking for? What do they want you to do?
For example, in SWAT, they are demanding the enforcement of a law which is there on the statute book. It is a regulation that was promulgated in 1998 by the then government of Nawaz Sharif. It talks of Nizami of the justice system according to Islamic rules, but it is not about the substantive laws, it is about the procedures. People in SWAT were used to a very simple and inexpensive dispensation of justice system under the Wali of SWAT, the princely ruler of SWAT. Now, our justice system appears to them to be very cumbersome and complicated and expensive. So there has been lot of frustration in SWAT. That's why the government of Nawaz Sharif had promulgated that ordinance in 1998. They want its full implementation. They want its full implementation, and we have promised to do that. Apart from that, they wanted the release of their prisoners. We had agreed to evaluation of cases by its merits. We have refused to withdraw cases, so we are still in the process. The courts are reviewing the cases where the crimes are not heinous, where the evidence is not there. Then the accused are released on bail by the courts. Similarly, there was agreement about the compensation to people whose property was damaged in the armed conflict. These were types of demand. They also demanded the construction of an economic university. Yes, we agreed with them. We thought it was a good idea to introduce modern Islam, to introduce some real scholarship. Because many of these people are ignorant. They talk about Islam, but they really have not read much. They really do not know much about Islam as a religion. So this is the type of thing that we had negotiated.
Mr. Afra Saeed, in a recent trip that I took to the Fatah area, I discovered that one of the main problems at the moment is distribution and access to affordable food and also affordable gasoline in order to be able to move around. That is only part of the problem, but talking to people in the local areas and certainly in the villages, I got the impression that the sense of marginalization, and isolation had a lot to do with the feeling that traditionally services like education, health, transport, etc., were not equally distributed amongst communities in Fatah. With the absorption of Fatah into Northwest Frontier Province, put that right, and how do you propose to distribute what little there is of the national budget equally to communities in Fatah? How would that be done? Because that is a crucial issue in many provinces in Pakistan, not only in this given area. Thanks.
Yes, I agree with your evaluation and your observation of the situation. When we speak of integrating Fatah into the mainstream, we think that they should have equal protection by law. They should have equal opportunities for education. They should have equal opportunity to have access to information, have access to justice, have equal political rights. Presently, Fatah is run like fiefdoms by political agents who are gradually being replaced by military officers who control the area. this has created a lot of alienation. And I think you have observed yourself that there's a lot of frustration. If political parties go there, they will be better able to represent the aspiration of the people of Fatah. And political platforms will provide them forums where they will be able to voice their concerns and demands and aspirations. So I think it's very important to have political parties in that area. Local government will also provide them with an opportunity to organize their own distribution of services system. That will, I think, be very important in the process of for the process of empowerment. Similarly, if they have representatives in the provincial assembly, they will be able to supervise and monitor provincial ministries that are operating in Fatah. Our education ministry, food ministry, construction ministry, and other ministries are operating in Fatah, but there is no one in the provincial government or the provincial assembly to supervise the activities of these ministries. So I think these are the measures that will integrate Fatah into the mainstream.
Okay, Afrasia, one final question, please, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Sir, do you feel there's a functioning government in Islamabad these days?
Excuse me. Can you repeat the question?
My question, sir, is do you regard what is happening in Islamabad today as a functioning government?
Well, it's a difficult transition. General Musharraf's government was not a popular government. It was actually run by the army. As the army is withdrawing, the civilian institutions are to strengthen themselves to replace them. It's a difficult transition, and we know there are serious problems in this transition. But I am confident that if this process is not interrupted once again, the civilian institutions will consolidate and will fill the gaps that are presently there. I'm sure elected government, elected institutions will guide the country, and once the parliament has the upper hand, then the civil-military relationship can be defined afresh.
Okay, well, on that note of optimism, we're very grateful again for your time and apologize for keeping you on the line for so long. Of course, we wish you luck in your negotiations, and we would like to get back to you soon, if you don't mind, to be updated about the progress of your talk. So many thanks again from everyone here at CSIS.
You are welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.